On our podcast, we talk about important topics in drinking water, such as drought, bottled water, and drinking water conservation. Now we want to hear from you, our listeners. We reached out to our customers, asking them to submit the questions they've always wondered about drinking water. Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of What About Water? I'm Jeff Sabo, Chief Executive Officer of the Suffolk County Water Authority, which provides safe drinking water to approximately 1.2 million Suffolk County residents in New York. So we received about 150 questions from our customers. In today's special mailbag episode, we'll sit down with SCWA's experts, who will be giving you the answers to some of the most frequently asked questions. So let's jump into it. Joining me today is Joe Pokorny, Deputy Chief Executive Officer for Operations. Joe has been with the authority since 1995. He earned a bachelor's degree in science in electrical engineering from Manhattan College, a master's in business administration from St. John's University, and is a licensed professional engineer in New York State. Welcome, Joe.
Nice to be here, Jeff.
Also joining us today is Janice Tinsley, our Deputy Chief Executive Officer for Customer Service and Chief Diversity and Equity Officer. Janice has worked at the Suffolk County Water Authority since 2008. She received her bachelor's degree in art and political science from Lycoming College and has her Juris Doctorate in law from Brooklyn Law School.
Hi, Jeff.
Also with us today is Thomas Schneider, Director of Water Quality and Laboratory Services. Tom has worked for the Suffolk County Water Authority since 1993. He's a member of the American Chemical Society, Science Advisory Board, and the American Water Works Association. Mr. Schneider earned a bachelor's degree in science in physical chemistry from Stony Brook University. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad all three of you are here. Between the three of you, we have, maybe over 40 years for sure, maybe 60 years of knowledge and experience and expertise. As I mentioned earlier, we do have over 100 questions. We're going to prioritize them and try to get through as many as we possibly can. But we hope that this episode is the first of what may be many episodes answering questions from our customers. Okay, we'll start with our first question, and I'll pose this to Janice. Janice, customer Diane Fusco is asking if we have fluoride, if there's fluoride in our drinking water.
Diane, this is a question that we often receive in the call center, and the answer is no, we do not add fluoride to our water.
I think it's important to know, too, that we've never had fluoride in our drinking water.
That's correct, Jeff. The fluoride that is added in some water districts, mostly the closest one that I can think of is in New York City, but those are added because the health department in those locales require the water supplier to do it. In Long Island and in Suffolk County specifically, our health department does not require it.
Thank you, Joe. Let's move on here to our next question. This comes from Franca Okia. They're asking about lead and copper, and do we have lead in our drinking water? This is certainly a hot topic. It's getting a lot of attention across the nation because of lead and copper rule revisions that are being proposed by the Environmental Protection Agency. Certainly Joe and a lot of the staff here have been reviewing the proposal and providing some comments. Joe, why don't you start and fill us in on lead and copper?
Well, I think the most important thing that people should know is that there's no lead in the groundwater on Long Island. So when we pump water out of the ground through our wells and into our distribution system, the source water has no lead in it. In addition to that, the piping network that delivers water to your curb, that is our large diameter water mains, that has no lead in it either. So then the question becomes, where does the lead come from? The lead typically comes from either a lead service line, if a customer has that, that's the line that goes from the water main in the street to your home, or the plumbing within your home. The lead that is used to solder the copper pipes together, the solder actually contained lead. Those are the sources. When the water comes in contact with those lead plumbing components, very often the lead will leach into the drinking water and the customer will be exposed to it in that way.
Excellent. Joe, we've also been working with customers and engaging customers, asking them to self-identify, to go to our website and follow the steps in order to review their own plumbing in their home to help us complete the required inventory per the EPA's regulations.
That's correct, Jeff. The EPA promulgated a new rule called the Lead and Copper Rule Improvements. And as part of that Lead and Copper Rule, we have to do an inventory of all of the service lines that serve all of our 400,000 customers. So we have records to show us what that material is made of, but in some cases we don't have the records, and that's where we're asking our customers to help us identify the pipe that's basically coming through the wall in their basements.
So we would encourage them to reach out, to go to the website, to see if they can get through that and identify their what type of pipes they have in their home, or if they have a question, to reach out to maybe customer service. Right, Janice?
Customers can call our call center, and the call center clerks will assist them if they have trouble trying to follow the directions on the website. Our customer service telephone number is 631-698-9500. Also, when our field techs are out on routine services and working with our customers, they are also checking off to see what is coming into the customer's home and what might be on our side. So we are attacking this issue from many different areas, many different directions.
So we've inventoried about two-thirds of our almost 400,000 accounts here in Suffolk County. Joe, how many of those accounts have we found where there's lead?
Well, Jeff, we've been very fortunate because we've only identified a handful, less than a dozen homes that are actually currently served by lead service lines. And this is really a function of the fact that Long Island and Suffolk County in particular was built out primarily after World War II, when lead really wasn't being used for lead service lines.
And throughout our history here, Tom, as laboratory director, could you talk a little bit about some of the efforts we've made to ensure that there's no lead detected in the distribution system?
We've been taking part of the lead and copper study for approximately 30 years. We've never had an exceedance of lead above the action level. And you can, even if they lower it to 10 parts per billion, as they propose, we still wouldn't exceed that action level. We're very fortunate that the Suffolk County Water Authority has a great corrosion control program. What I mean by that is that we add hydrated lime to bring the pH of the water above 7. That way, we're protecting people from their own plumbing.
Janice and I were at a civic meeting last week, and a question that we got from someone who was attending the meeting was about chlorine and why is there chlorine in drinking water? Here in Suffolk County, we're required to put chlorine in our drinking water.
Absolutely. So we're following the health department requirements by putting chlorine in the water. And, you know, the fact that people smell this or they detect it in their homes, that's actually the good news, because that means that the chlorine is present throughout the water system. The chlorine is not there to kill bacteria that's in the groundwater. The groundwater that comes out of the ground, that comes out of our wells, believe it or not, is sterile. There's no bacteria in that water. The concern is that when the water gets distributed out in the piping system and then through people's homes, there may be an opportunity for bacteria to get in there. In the middle of the night, somebody with a backhoe might hit a water main and cause a water main break and introduce bacteria into the system. That extra chlorine that's in the water all the time in all parts of the system protects people from getting sick as a result of something like that.
One of the things that we point out to our customers when they call the call center and may express this concern is that about smelling or tasting the chlorine, is that we will tell them to, they could have a filter on their water line, or they put it in a pitcher, put it in the refrigerator overnight, and it will lose that smell and that taste.
That's correct. There's also a third option. You can add any kind of citrus, because any citrus has ascorbic acid that'll naturally remove the chlorine, so lime, lemon. That's why a lot of restaurants will serve citrus in the drinking water at the table.
Let's keep moving here. We have a next question from Jim Avelli. Jim is asking, saying he's been curious about the effect of lawn fertilizer in our drinking water. Certainly a topic we know a little bit about. You want to start with maybe your thoughts on that, Tom?
You know, certainly anything that you use at home can have an effect on your own life. I would recommend using as little fertilizer and pesticides as possible. Even though our groundwater is protected by how deep our wells are, you still want to be very judicious about what you're using at home. That could actually have a profound effect on your quality of life and also on the environment.
Maybe we'll back up a little bit and just refresh everyone's memory. All of the water that we drink here on Long Island and all of the water that the Suffolk County Water Authority supplies comes from an aquifer beneath our feet, from several aquifers beneath our feet. We're different than New York City that gets their water from upstate reservoirs and pipe it, and they pipe the water down from Neversink Reservoir and other areas in upstate New York. And we certainly don't get our drinking water from the Great Lakes like many of our supplies in northern New York get their drinking water from. So everything that we put in the ground here has potential to impact the water that we then consume.
So even though we are protected, we want to make sure that we have enough water moving forward, that it doesn't impact the types of treatments we have to install. If we all do our job and use a little bit less or use the right product for the right task, we'll all be better off in the long run.
I think that the next question, Tom, sort of ties into the question that you just answered, which is from Amy Benova, who's asking how often we test and how do we know the quality of our drinking water? Maybe you can start and then we'll jump over to Joe about where do we test and what happens when we find something that we have a concern about.
So we test for more contaminants, more parameters than are required, about 265 more than what is required. We test for microbiology on a daily basis. We go out to our distribution system. We're out there 7 days a week in all kinds of weather. We're collecting those samples. We're also collecting samples from our well field before and after any treatment. So it really depends on how it's regulated, but we, at the bare minimum, we'll test for something biannually. That's twice a year. But if we find something and there's a treatment involved, we may go there monthly or every 2 weeks to make sure that the treatment system is removing that contaminant.
Tom, I think it's important to remind folks again, we test, Joe, maybe you can answer this question. You certainly can answer it better than I can, where we test, right, and how we test, and maybe in a little bit more detail than Tom did.
Sure. So like Tom said, we test in a variety of different locations. We test at the place where the water is produced, the pump stations. We test the raw water that comes out of the ground from the wells. Then if we have treatment, we have treatment at all of our facilities. So after the treatment system, we test there to see what the effectiveness of the treatment was and to demonstrate that the water that goes out to the distribution system meets all standards. And then to make sure that everything is good that our customer is getting, we go out and we test in the distribution system. So there are three different locations. And in my case, the water that I'm most concerned about is that water that is coming out of the ground, because if that water coming out of the ground, Tom detects in our laboratory, detects some kind of contaminant, it's my group that's responsible for building the treatment system to remove that contaminant so that the water that does go out to the distribution system meets or exceeds all the drinking water standards. It's important for people to know that all of the water that goes out to our distribution system meets or exceeds drinking water standards. We don't provide water to our customers that violates any of those treatment standards. Violation of those treatment standards is equivalent to violating the law, and we don't do that.
Janice, we had talked earlier about your team and providing customer service, and if there are questions, it's not just reaching out to the call center at that number you provided earlier, 631-698-9500, but you also have other folks on staff that will go to people's homes.
We have field technicians that will go and take a water sample in the event that someone believes that they have a concern with their water or think there's a problem. We will take water samples and that will be forwarded to the lab, and Tom's team will do a thorough investigation and research of that specific sample, those specific samples, and we will return the results to the customer.
Thank you, Janice. Moving on, we have a question from Paul Decker. Mr. Decker is asking how long it takes rainfall to reach the aquifer.
People ask that a lot, and the answer is it depends, because it takes time for water or rainfall to percolate down through the aquifer. So the question is, how deep down are you talking about? So we have wells that are glacial wells. They can be a couple of hundred feet deep, and they're close to the surface by comparative speaking. But we have other wells that are 700 feet deep. And obviously, it takes rainwater a much longer time to get down, to get through all the layers of sand and gravel and clay to get down to a well that's that deep.
Mr. Decker has a couple of questions here, Joe. We might just stay with Mr. Decker for a little bit. His next question is about water towers or elevated storage tanks, and how are they used and the importance of those tanks?
So everybody sees water towers all around. The Water Authority operates about 65 water tanks in its water system. And a water tower does two different things. First of all, it's a storage of water. So this is water that we've pumped out of the ground. We've treated it. And now it's full. That tank is full. And that water is over all of our heads. The fact that the water is above our heads translates to pressure. So the pressure in our water system is really derived from those elevated water tanks. So if you've got a full water tank, you've got great pressure in your home, and if all the lights went out and we lost power and the ability to pump water, we would still have water pressure because we'd have a full tank of water above our heads to provide us water during a period like that.
And talk to us, Joe. You know, we serve from Melville to Montauk, 1.2 million people. Certainly have, as you mentioned, over 60 storage tanks that help with pressure and help with water storage and all that. Other parts of the country, do they have more water tanks for population served or account served than we do, or less?
Well, I've never done a study on that, Jeff, but I do know that there are places where the amount of storage is much greater than what we have in our system. The Water Authority has always had the philosophy that we have plenty of storage and it's below our feet. And so as long as we have a pumping system capable of bringing water to the ground, you know, up to the surface and treating it, that really provides quite a bit of storage in itself. So the tanks that we have provide kind of a float, and they provide some instantaneous ability to provide large amounts of water, like in the case of a fire. But I think that by all measures, the Water Authority is probably operating on a very, very, meager amount of storage compared to its demand.
That's the part of the reason why I asked the question, because I knew the way you'd answer. Because we have you to thank. Several years ago, you came back from a conference, right? And you were probably in D.C. or somewhere meeting with other drinking water executives and talking about storage and supply and the relative small percentage that we have here in the Water Authority as opposed to other suppliers across the nation. And you're correct. The philosophy was, if we need it, drill another well, we'll get another 1,000 gallons or 2,000 gallons. But that changed. And since that time, maybe 5-7 years ago, something like that, we've been very active in constructing storage tanks, primarily on the East End. We've constructed a couple. We have more plans for additional ones in the future. But the importance of the million gallon, 2 million gallon storage tank in areas where we need water supply, I think can't be understated.
No, you're absolutely right, Jeff. And I take credit for what you're talking about, for coming up with this great idea. But look, it's not anything that is new. It was just kind of a recognition on our part that to meet the increasing demand for water, it's easier to build a storage tank, keep the tank full, and then run boosters out of that to serve our customers, as opposed to plunking in well after well after well throughout the county.
Customer Gerard Gilliberti is asking about underground leaks and ways that maybe residents, if they suspect that they have a leak, things that they can do to make sure that their line isn't leaking and that there aren't any issues with their meter. Janice, can you talk a little bit about some of the things that maybe residents would notice or things that they would see in order to determine if there's a leak at their home?
Well, if they have a meter on the inside of their home, they can go down, look at the meter, and there is a little red arrow. If that is spinning and they believe everything has been turned off in their home, as far as water, then they have a leak and they should call us immediately. Outside, let's say if their meter is at the property line, and they can't access the meter, but they see water pooling outside or something like that, they should call us. We also have our field technicians that can come and assist someone in trying to determine, because we do have leak detection apparatuses, so that they can come and assist a customer in trying to determine if they have a leak.
That's all helpful information. When you talk about water main breaks and leaks throughout our system, you know, we have over 6,000 miles of water main. It's, you know, hard to believe, right? In a geographic area our size, that's enough water main to go from New York City to Moscow, I believe, or Siberia, I should say. And we have at times, depending on the weather and the age of water main and a lot of other factors, several hundred leaks a year. Where are most of those leaks, Joe?
By far, Jeff, most of the leaks that we have take place in the southwest corner of our service territory. That's kind of like the Amityville, Copaig areas of and Babylon areas of Suffolk County. These are places where they installed sewers underneath our water mains. They retrofitted the sewers after our water mains were installed. And in a lot of cases, that wound up undermining a lot of our water mains. And a water main doesn't like to be undermined. It likes to have continuous support throughout its entire length. But if it does get undermined in any particular area, then the vibrations of traffic, the freeze-thaw action of the weather will cause movement, and movement will cause breaks.
I have a question here from Joy McCann. She's asking if residents of Suffolk County who have well water and are not connected to the Suffolk County Water Authority or another municipal supplier, if they have an increased risk for cancer or other diseases. Want to talk a little bit about well water and what we're doing to try to connect people, Tom?
So if you have a well, you may not know what your water quality is like. You know, for what we do with our production wells is we go there on a regular basis. We're taking a lot of samples. We're doing a lot of testing. But if you have a private well, you may have not had that tested recently or at all. So you have no idea if that has emerging contaminants. If you don't know if it's been impacted by saltwater intrusion, for example, you wouldn't know what the nitrates were like. I know that the Suffolk County Health Department has a program where they do some testing, and they've been reaching out to people that are in areas that have been impacted by emerging contaminants. So if they reach out to you, you should certainly take advantage of their testing to see what the water quality is like. Over the last several years, we've had large projects where we're hooking up some of these communities that haven't had access to public water. They've had contamination issues, they've had supply issues, and there's certainly been a very big push to have those people connected to us so they have, you know, the same assurances that we do with our water quality.
Yeah, and if you look at the area that we serve here in Suffolk County, not all, but a majority of those not connected to a municipal supplier like the Water Authority are on the east end. Really, it's Brookhaven Township east into the Forks, Southampton, East Hampton, and Southold. And many of those areas over the last, I would say, maybe 7 or 6 or 8 years have come to us, those municipalities along with the health department, and the regulatory agencies, the municipal governments have all worked together to try to extend water main to these people to take them off their private wells that are at risk. So in some of those communities that are on private wells, but there's been connection programs in place and projects in place, they're still not customers. They're not customers. Wainscott is a perfect example where we had, I believe, over 400 potential accounts. And I think to this day, we're only about 72%, 75%. So if you live in Wainscott and in that particular survey area, we would ask you to reach out to the Water Authority and to try to get connected because you're still at risk. That's just one of maybe close to 60 survey areas throughout the county that the health department is testing. Many of those areas we've already connected, or some of those areas. We're constantly looking for grant funding to try to reduce the cost as much as possible and to make it affordable for residents that need to connect. Just back to your point, Tom, if you're on a private well, certainly reach out to the Suffolk County Health Department and ask that they come and sample your water. If that's an issue, you can also reach out to a private laboratory The other thing I want to mention is you want to make sure that they're testing for sort of an expanded list of compounds, correct? As much as possible?
As much as possible. Nitrates are important, but you certainly want to look for the emerging contaminants, the perfluorinated alkyl compounds like PFOA, PFOS, 1,4-dioxane. Depending on where you are, if you're near agriculture, you want to have pesticides and herbicides looked at. That's certainly an issue out east. But you want to make sure it's what you're doing or what's going on around you can really have an effect on your well water.
Thank you for listening to today's mailbag episode. That wraps up our current set of questions. Stay tuned as we'll be answering more questions in future episodes. Do you want to learn more about the Suffolk County Water Authority? Come to our education center, where you can see displays from our history, build your own aquifer, and experience what it's like to be a meter reader. This interactive experience is fun and educational for all ages. Head over to scwa.com/education center and book a tour today. What About Water is produced by Jeff Sabo, Theodore Aponte, and Dan Dubois. If you enjoyed What About Water, be sure to rate us and to leave a review. Help spread the word by telling a friend and by following the Suffolk County Water Authority on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm Jeff Sabo.